This is On the Mark. Pleased to be joined by one of the greatest switch hitters in the history of the game, a phenomenal defender, a World Series champion, Mark Teixeira, with me today, one of five switch hitters with over 400 home runs. Mark, let's start with a trivia question here. Do you know the other four players who were switch hitters who also have over 400 home runs in their career?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty easy. It's good company. Mickey Mantle, Eddie Murray, Chipper Jones, and Carlos Beltran.
Look at you, historian of the game. That's not bad, though, right, when you see your name on that list?
It's a great list to be a part of. You know, it's kind of humbling when you can be spoken in the same sentence with those type of guys. You know, it just kind of makes your whole career all worth it.
So you're a young guy, right, and you're trying to find your way in baseball. When did you start switch hitting? I mean, was that super early, or was there a coach that came along and said, hey, Mark, you should try this?
Yeah, I always switch hit as a kid in the backyard. I learned how to play baseball in the backyard, playing wolf ball with my dad. And, you know, I was a switch hitter because of Eddie Murray. I grew up in Baltimore and watched Eddie Murray play a bunch when I was a kid. And so I was always messing around left-handed in the backyard, and I started doing it in games full-time when I was 13 years old, at the urging of my father, who kind of told me that, you know what, baseball's pretty easy for you right now. Just being a right-handed hitter, want to challenge yourself and try to hit lefty as well, and the rest is history.
Wow, that's a big-time challenge by dad right there. Did you kind of look at him like he was crazy, or like, all right, fine, I'll be Eddie Murray, that's cool?
No, I was really excited about it. A lot of the coaches that I had weren't excited about me doing it when I was young. And then when I was 13, I told my 13-year-old coach, I said, I'm hitting left-handed this year against righties, so if you want me on the team, those are my terms, basically. I was obviously the best player on the team, and the coach allowed me to do it. And like I said, you know, the rest is history, and it worked out for me in the end.
That's pretty cool to know your position at 13. Hey, man, I know you want me on this team. most 13-year-olds, they don't get to do that. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I always tell people that, you know, whether you're a professional baseball player or basketball player or any of those, you know, top sports, you know, pretty young. I mean, you know that you have special talent, and then it's just a matter of being able to build that talent and work hard and get the most out of your natural ability.
Yeah, I always find guys who make it to your level, Mark, it's just extremely interesting how you, as a kid, build that vision that you're good enough to do it. Was your dad kind of the coaching type? It sounds like he was from what you said earlier. Was he pushing you early?
He was, yeah. He was, and he pushed me in the right way. He wasn't one of these crazy, overbearing fathers by any means, but he was a dad that knew my talent, knew that I was special at a young age, and because of that, you know, he wanted me to work hard. He wanted me to challenge myself. He wanted me to do the right things on and off the field. You know, that included in the classroom and be respectful at home and, you know, kind of doing the right things, you know, whenever possible. And so from that standpoint, he was my best coach, best teacher, and best friend growing up.
Did you have, I should know this, but I don't. Do you have brothers or sisters that played a lot too, or are you kind of the lone athlete in the family?
I was the lone athlete. My older sister wasn't really into sports too much. She played a little bit of high school softball and was a cheerleader. Other than that, she really had no interest in sports. So I think by the time she was a sophomore, junior, she stopped playing softball. So I was the last athlete in the family. It was just my sister and I, and a lot of my parents' attention was on, you know, me driving around the state or the country, really, you know, following me play basketball and soccer and baseball.
Did you ever think, you know what, I prefer basketball or soccer to baseball, or was baseball always the number one?
I actually liked basketball more as a kid, but I was so much better at baseball than basketball. I didn't have that natural talent like I was talking to you about. I mean, you know, basketball for me was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, but I always knew that baseball was going to be my sport, and by the time I was a senior in high school, I was just playing baseball full time.
Yeah. All right. Well, here, let's talk major league career. You of course started with the Rangers and the Braves and the Angels, and then wrapping it up with a long stint in a world championship with the New York Yankees. I mean, I remember when you came in, Mark, I didn't think you were ever going to be leaving Texas, but then you ended up getting dealt to the Braves, and what was a huge deal at the time. Is it true that you actually were, you were on a boat fishing and like drenched your phone and you basically found out on television that you were going to be an Atlanta Brave?
That is a true story. I was with my buddy David DeLucci, and I'd heard that we were going to be, that I was probably going to be traded within a day or two. It was like 2 days before the deadline, the trade deadline in July. And I went out fishing on an off day in Cleveland. David was playing for the Indians at the time. So we went out, and I said, hey, do you have a waterproof bag in this boat? It was kind of a small boat. We were basically on a big pond. It wasn't much of anything, but so you have a waterproof bag I can put this in. He said, yeah, put it in here. So I put it in this bag, and we get done fishing, and I open up the bag, and the bag is soaked. It's soaked at the bottom of the boat, and it's like, you know, what are you doing to me, Luch? So I had to run to the store, you know, Singular at the time, I think. Run to the store, get a new phone, get that all set up, and by the time that I kind of gotten my new phone, people were trying to call me, and I found out it was on TV as I was kind of like going to get my phone. the trade went across, so it's kind of a funny story.
Yeah, that's one way to get traded right there. I assume at the time you were bummed maybe leaving Texas, but then you're getting to go to basically, you know, home. You're a Georgia Tech guy. I'm sure you were excited to go to Atlanta. Is that basically what was going on in the mind at the time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I knew Texas was rebuilding, as they should have been. I mean, it was kind of one of those perfect trades for both sides. I got a new team and got to play for the Braves, which was a great opportunity for me going back to Atlanta. My wife's from Georgia. Going to Georgia Tech was a lot of fun for me, and I have tons of friends that were still in Atlanta at the time. And being able to go play for the Braves was kind of a dream come true. I watched him growing up on PBS. I watched him in college, obviously. So it was really neat being able to play for the Braves. And like I said, a trade that worked out for both parties.
You got to play with a pretty good switch hitter over there in Chipper, who we mentioned earlier. What was like the best part of being around Chipper Jones? I assume that helped you as your career progressed.
Just watching him do his thing. I mean, I played a lot of great players, and you know, Chipper might not have been the best player I played with, but he might have been the best. He might have the best hands when it comes to eye hand contact. You know, the coordination that he had at the plate from both sides of the plate. He was such a great hitter. And just watching him, he batted third, I batted fourth. Just watching him for a year, and him getting on base for me to be able to drive him in for a year was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, with Chipper. And I know that it's not like this for you guys, that you guys put in a ton of work, but me watching him, I just thought it is effortless for this guy. He's just so natural at it. That was, you know, just watching Chipper. That's
100%. Yeah, 100%. You're exactly right. He was probably the most natural hitter I ever played with. And he rolled out of bed and he hit, and it doesn't matter who the pitcher was, what the situation, he was going to put the barrel on the ball. And like I said, he was the best at that.
So then you move on to the Angels, and you know, traded out of Atlanta, who's, and you're all of a sudden you're playing a half a season with Anaheim, and then another half a season before ending up with New York. You guys had a great team in 08, man. That was a hell of a club. Didn't go your way in the postseason.
Maybe the best team I played on. I mean, the 08 Angels and 09 Yankees were the two best teams I ever played on. And I don't think there was a kind of a close second after those two teams. So I'll put those two teams up against each other. If you played 100 times, it'd probably be 50-50. Yeah. But you know, playoffs are weird. You only play 5 games, and you get a bad bounce here, and you don't get a hit in a big situation. All of a sudden, you lose a 5-game series, and that's baseball, and it happens a lot, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at your playoff numbers, and like, you had postseasons where you hit 350, you hit 300, and you had postseasons where you didn't get a hit. I mean, how do you, if you're talking to guys now who are going in the postseason for the first time, what do you tell them? Because you're going up against the best pitchers, but there's a ton of pressure. So, I mean, even if I just don't, it's hard to have any real expectations going into the playoffs. Just, I would think it would be hardest to handle the failure with that big of a spotlight on you, but then, you know, also sort of keeping yourself level when you're having success.
Yeah, but you know, postseason is weird because it's such a short sample size. I mean, you know, you take anywhere from three games if unfortunately if you get swept in the first game, or up to, you know, 15 or 18 if you go all the way to the World Series and you play you play a bunch of games that way. That's still a really small sample size, and so I've had good series, bad series. You are facing the best pitchers in the game. That's one thing that you're going to be guaranteed when you get to the postseason. And the biggest thing for me is try not to do too much. And I probably the times that I didn't have good postseasons, I was trying to kind of put the team on my back a little too much. And, you know, sometimes you got to take your walks in the postseason. Sometimes you got to take your singles because like I said, there's some good pitching and they're not going to give in.
Toughest thing, best thing about playing in New York?
The best thing about playing in New York is when you win, it's kind of immortal. You know, it's just, you know, that championship season in 2009 will never be forgotten. And I still see people almost every day that say something about it and say thanks for 2009, because championships are everything in New York. So for me to be able to play on that team was pretty special. And the toughest thing is when you're losing, it's a tough place to play. I mean, you're not happy. Your teammates aren't happy. Your front office isn't happy. Ownership, fans, because we all expect so much out of ourselves in New York that when it's not going well, it's magnified.
Do you are you surprised by the early success this year with the 2017 Yankees?
A little bit. I mean, I think we all knew that they had talent coming, and you know, I think the pleasant surprises are some of the veterans that are doing well, whether it's on the pitching staff or veteran hitters coming back and having bounce back years like Brett Gardner and Chase Headley and Jacoby Ellsbury. Those type of guys bouncing back are really important. So I think pleasant surprises, definitely. But I think they're here to stay. You know, it's a good team, a lot of talent, and we'll see if they can keep winning.
Let me get one Derek Jeter story out of you, Mark. Well, what's a highlight Jeter moment for you?
I mean, you know, everyone has seen the moments on the field, but you know, I think in my biggest thing that I always talk about with Derek is he did everything right, and that means on the field, it means off the field, and I tell people, you know, Derek should write a manual or a book for all young athletes. When you become a professional, if you're a top draft pick, or you know, you're a rookie that's kind of come onto the scene, and people are giving you attention and telling you you're the greatest thing in the world, you know, just talk to Derek Jeter and he'll tell you how to handle that success and handle that spotlight, because he was the best at it. And I marveled, you know, playing for 6 years with him. I marveled at the way he handled different situations. And he always handled them the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I've covered a lot of different sports, and Jeter to me reminds me the most of, say, Michael Jordan, because whenever I would see MJ, he was always professional, always completely in control of what was going on. And that's what it was like when I got to walk in the Yankees clubhouse however many times. There was just a presence with Jeter where you knew that he knew exactly what questions were coming, how to answer them, and how he was going to represent himself in the team. I mean, it was impressive. Very, very impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think he would probably appreciate being mentioned with Michael Jordan, because those are two great champions.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right, you're a big film guy. You're a member of the board of the Greenwich International Film Festival, and that's why we're talking to you today. What's your favorite baseball movie of all time, Mark Teixeira?
I would say Bull Durham, with Major League being a close second.
Okay, so if you're going Bull Durham, does the scene that Bull Durham starts with the little extracurricular activities before Nuke LaLoosh takes the mound, has that ever happened in minor league baseball, or is that just a Bull Durham thing? Could that be a real situation?
I'm going to have to give you a no comment on that one. Everyone has their different theories. But listen, I will say this. Bull Durham, I only played one season in the minor leagues, thank goodness. But Bull Durham is as close to realistic minor league life as any movie I've seen.
That's awesome. Would you say that the conversation on the mound would ever happen? Where are we going to dinner?
That's a little too much. That's a little too much.
Okay.
I think that was probably a little bit more of a dramatization than would normally happen. That being said, there are some funny conversations on the mound or with probably more between the fielders when, you know, during a pitching change. You know, sometimes, you know, if the coach comes out here, he's probably not real happy that he has to make a pitching change. So he won't be joking around like that or, you know, saying those type of things.
Right. You're on the producing sports panel this year for the film festival. What does that entail for you?
So we're going to be screening the Mike and Mad Dog 30 for 30 that ESPN did. I mean, I think ESPN does an amazing job with those documentaries. And we're going to talk about you know, athletes or broadcasters and how they look at sports, you know, and, you know, just different ways to cover it, different ways to talk about it. And, you know, I think what Mike and the Mad Dog did for sports radio, they kind of made kind of a new market for sports radio. And you see a lot of guys following their lead with you know, healthy debate back and forth. And they're doing it on TV shows now as well. So it's going to be a really cool documentary to watch, and then we'll have fun talking about it.
So how are you feeling being a part of the dark side here now, working for ESPN and being a member of the media?
Yeah, I mean, I still don't you know, think about it that much. I answer questions. You know, I give my opinion. You know, the only thing that's different from now than when I was playing is that I can be a little bit more honest now.
Yeah.
So when someone asked my opinion about something that was happening while I was playing, I had to be guarded to protect my teammates or protect my manager or front office or not to upset someone else in the game. Now, as a member of the media, you can be honest and you can, you know, you can say things that you wouldn't otherwise say while you were playing. And that makes it more fun for me. I'm really enjoying this job.
So you're not worried about ruffling the feathers of, say, a former teammate? Does that feel comfortable for you?
I mean, if, you know, if I'm telling the truth or I'm, you know, someone asks me my opinion, you know, I think that's part of the territory. I don't lose any sleep over it. I'll tell you that.
Fair enough. I was going through Twitter and I came across one tweet. I hated Mark Teixeira as a Yankee, but him in Baseball Tonight, he's just a stud. So I think that's like the ultimate compliment, right? He hated you on the field because he wanted to see the Yankees lose and you fail, and now he likes listening to you. I thought that was pretty solid.
Well, yeah, I like hearing that because, you know, I love baseball and I want fans to enjoy baseball. I want fans to enjoy listening to me talk about it and watch ESPN while I'm on the shows and just have fun. I mean, listen, this is all entertainment, and I think sometimes we forget that. We forget that this is entertainment. And I just want to have fun with it and try to do my best job of bringing fans into the game from a player's perspective, because I've been through it all. You know, that's the cool thing about my career is I got to play four different cities. You know, I got to play on some great teams. I got to play on some last place. I played for some managers that were fiery and some managers that sat back and just kind of let his players do their thing. So I've been through a lot of cool experiences, and being able to share that with the fans is important.
Yeah, let's talk about that entertainment for one second here. And I've seen you have a couple comments like you'd like the game to be faster, but you don't necessarily have the solution. So let me just give you a couple here. Number one, let's limit the amount of mound visits we can have. I see catchers going out five times an inning.
Agreed.
I mean,
agreed.
Okay, all right. I mean, that's just like, hey, man, there's got to be a signal.
That's, yeah, that's a no-doubter. We got to do that one.
How about this? Once you're in the batter's box, unless you have if you hit a foul ball, fine. But other than that, you can only take one foot out. You can look down at their base.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. We're two for two here.
Agreed.
All right.
Yep. Two for two.
Now, I don't know. Like, to me, I don't think you could do the pitch clock. Because if you got a runner on base, it can't work. But I think outside of a runner on base, let's go. I mean, that should be something where if there's nobody on, I don't know what the number is, but it's got to happen. Like, you're not.
I agree with that. Three for three.
Okay. I got no more. That's all I got. But that would help.
Perfect.
I think that would make a big difference.
Those three things, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a game, I think what we want to do is we want to pick up the pace. We want to limit the dead time. I think the unfortunate thing about pace of play right now is the way that the game is played is different. And the reason I say that is even back 15 years ago when I first started playing, pitchers were told to pitch to contact. You know, starters wanted to go deep in games. I mean, starters got paid in free agency if they went deep into games and threw a lot of innings. Now, it's give me your best five innings, maybe six, and get out of there. Right. So what that means is they're trying to hit every single corner. They're throwing a lot of breaking pitches, all these mound visits. They're grinding over every single at bat, and you have more foul balls. You have more pitches, in general, because you have more foul balls, you have more takes, you have more strikeouts, and the game is just that's going to be hard to change because that's the way the game has evolved. And until you make a rule where it's only three balls and two strikes, you have three balls and you're walking and two strikes and you're out, I don't see that part of the game changing. However, I would like to see all this dead time taken care of. And even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a game, that's a step in the right direction.
What do you think about the strike zone? Because, I mean, Major League Baseball, they want action, so they're trying to lift it up above the knees and they want balls in play. But to me, when you have a strike zone that is that tight, guys at the plate they're not going to swing. I mean, to me, it should be fun.
I have no problem with the strike zone. I really don't.
Okay.
I think the strike zone is fine. I wouldn't mind them just clarifying that the knees is not the bottom of the knee. It's the middle of the knee, and we're talking about an inch, maybe two. I don't think that changes the game drastically, but it just lets everybody know, okay, the middle of the knee, that's the strike. The bottom of the letters, that's the strike. Let's go play ball.
All right, and last one then on that. Would it be okay with you if there was a computer that was calling balls and strikes?
I have no problem with that because the technology is there. I think we have too many arguments of between managers and umpires and hitters and umpires and catchers and everyone's umpires. And we put replay in on the bases, and I think it's worked. It takes a little bit longer than I would like it, but overall it works. It has created an atmosphere where now as a first baseman, I never argued with the first base umpire because I knew replay was going to catch it.
Right.
So no big deal, no arguments anymore. So if we had some sort of electronic strike zone, I would have no problem with that.
Yeah, I just got to say, it works incredibly well for tennis. I mean, I grew up, that was like
John. Sure does.
Right? I mean, yes or no, is boom, done. Let's move along. So I think it'd be
exactly.
Great. I think it'd be great for baseball.
It would be simple to do.
Yeah, yeah. If guys would lose jobs, but you can create something else there. They got to be in the ballpark somewhere as far as the umpires go.
Yep.
And so
I agree.
Yep. All right. Hey, Mark. Great to talk to you, and best of luck with the Greenwich International Film Festival. Love that for you, and love that you're doing ESPN and staying visible. And congrats on a phenomenal career. Are you a Hall of Famer in your mind?
I don't know. I don't get to make those decisions. Maybe someday if one person votes for me, I'll be happy.
Okay. I mean, you got gold gloves. You got over 400 home runs. You got World Series championships. You got a resume that can be argued here.
I appreciate that, and like I said, if you'd asked me when I was a rookie if I was going to be a Hall of Famer, I'd be like, hey, one step at a time. I need my first hit first. so just to be in that conversation is pretty cool.
Well, and congrats on your career, Mark. It was a pleasure watching. Great to talk to you today.
Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it.